Illinois still doesn't have a full budget. Pensions are unfunded and debt continues to pile up. So you could argue the state of the state is looking pretty dismal. Good afternoon. I'm Tony Sarabia here with State House reporter Tony Arnold for live coverage of Governor Bruce Rauner's State of the State address. You know, given those circumstances, there may be a glimmer of hope. Senate leaders John Cullerton and Christine Redonio have been hashing out details that could finally result in a budget deal. But talks did not result in any votes because of opposition from both labor and business groups. Coming up, we'll hear where the governor sees the state headed under his leadership and if negotiating with Democrats is on the horizon. Plus, we'll have reaction from Democratic senators and a representative. First, Tony, the governor's office says he's pretty optimistic. What's there to be optimistic about?
Yeah, so we got a little bit of a preview of this speech, of the State of the State address, which usually has a lot of pomp and circumstance around it. But the source of the governor's optimism appears to be from what he sees as movement from House Speaker Michael Madigan, who's also the chairman of the Democratic Party in Illinois. And those two have been the chief rivals of each other since Rauner took over 2 years ago. Rauner sees movement in Madigan in terms of Madigan addressing his own economic agenda that he addressed about 2 weeks ago now at the inauguration of state representatives. Madigan's, I would note though that despite Rauner's optimism, Madigan's economic agenda does not really match up much at all with what the governor's outlined. In fact, Madigan even took the opportunity to criticize one of Rauner's key pieces of his economic reforms, which is workers' compensation. Mm-hmm. So even though Madigan and Rauner still are not seeing eye to eye, it's for Rauner, and I think what we're going to be hearing in this speech, it's enough to express this optimism that maybe something will be coming up that could resemble a deal.
You know, when the governor first took office, what is it now, 3 years ago, this is going to be his third state of the state.
This is the start of his third, yeah.
He had this agenda. It had, what if not 50, close to 50 items on it. He kept whittling it down, came to about maybe five.
Even that's changed lately.
And is there any sense that he will put aside this what seems to be the number one compensation reform?
No, there's no sign that is going away. In fact, he was even asked about that recently. Would he be willing to change any of his plans or his reforms agenda anytime soon? And he said, no, I'm going to be staying the course. So workers' compensation has been one of his main sticking points, to be more employer-friendly, business-friendly. And that's not something that's changed lately.
Governor Rauner making his way up to the podium. We're going to go to the governor right now. No, we'll keep talking as the governor is at the podium, just really just thanking everybody. So there's no sense of that he'll be backing down on that at all.
No, and actually, you know, if anything, he's repeated often that I think you'll hear a little bit more again today. Some of his agenda that is still on the table, which is A, term limits, B, redistricting for legislative districts, workers' compensation, and property taxes.
And here is Governor Rauner.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's an honor to stand with you today to discuss the state of our state. Despite the problems and uncertainties we face, I am deeply optimistic about the future of our beloved Illinois. We have big challenges, and like many of you, I'm frustrated by the slow pace of change here in Springfield. But with great challenge comes great opportunity. By working together, we can overcome any obstacle. We have the best people and the best location of any state in America. Through bipartisan cooperation, Illinois can once again be the economic engine of the Midwest and the home of innovation and prosperity for everyone. Two years ago, when our administration came into office, we set about to return Illinois to a state of growth and opportunity. We knew that we could not simply tax our way out of our fiscal problems. We needed to grow. We needed to fix a broken system. We needed to make Illinois more welcoming to job creators, to restore confidence in government, and to ensure that all of our children could receive a high-quality education and job training so they could obtain high-paying careers here at home. Given those realities, we set key goals for our administration. First, make Illinois the most ethical and efficient state in the nation. Second, invest in education so that Illinois has the best schools and vocational training in every neighborhood and in every community. And most importantly, make our state more competitive, more attractive to job creators, to grow our economy and bring more good-paying jobs to our state. Now, working together, we've begun to accomplish these goals, but there's so much that remains to be done. Inside government, over the past 2 years, we've made great strides in ethics reform. We closed the revolving door on executive branch employees leaving government to become administration lobbyists. We tightened the gift ban loopholes that lobbyists and contractors use to influence regulators and win favor with decision makers. We increased transparency so that any resident of the state can now go online and review state spending on contracts and at-will hires. We required more comprehensive economic interest statements so we could all see who was being paid and by whom. And we cleaned up the hiring mess we inherited at IDOT. And we're working cooperatively with Michael Shackman to strengthen state hiring rules even more. We're modernizing and streamlining state government and building toward a higher level of transparency through our new Department of Innovation and Technology. In the last year, the department has protected more than 5 billion records of Illinois residents that were previously left unsecured and unencrypted. And we're moving millions of pieces of paper out of file cabinets and into the digital age. Kirk Lonbaum leads our cybersecurity efforts at DOIT, our Department of Innovation and Technology. He's working around the clock, along with his teammates, to ensure that our efforts are successful and state records are secure. He's here today. Let's give him a hand. Thank you. We've cut red tape and made it easier for constituents to interact with state government. We're moving to a digital application process for professional licenses and reducing processing times by 70%. We're cutting paper and postage costs through online license renewal notifications, saving money and more than 16,000 hours of work every year. Richard Morris works for the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation and has been a leader in our transformation to online licensing. Working across agency lines and with professional associations outside of government, he has put the time and effort in with the right people, the right level, the right time to make this initiative a success. He's here with us today. Let's all give him a hand for his service to our state. Thank you. Thank you. We're transforming state government to benefit our people and our taxpayers. We appreciate it. We're using technology and innovation to stop fraud and abuse everywhere we can. We're already saving taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars inside Medicaid alone. And we're working together. We enacted historic reforms to crack down on unemployment insurance fraud as well. We've signed innovative new contracts now with 20 of our state government unions to drive more value for taxpayers by paying more for productivity and high performance rather than just seniority, by starting overtime pay after 40 hours rather than just 37 and a half, by adding greater flexibility in the workplace. And we've laid the groundwork for allowing volunteers to work at our state parks and health facilities. These are all common sense changes that are good for employees and taxpayers alike. We formed a bipartisan task force led by Lieutenant Governor Sanguinetti. Thank you. To recommend ways we can reduce the cost of our bloated bureaucracy across the state, our worst in the nation, 7,000 units of local government. Every dollar we can save in reducing bureaucracy is a dollar we can invest in education and human services, along with reducing our highest in the nation property taxes. The task force has made 27 recommendations that we can implement together, all of us in this room together, through legislation to save hundreds of millions of dollars. The communities of Grays Lake and Haynesville are leading by example. They've saved $500,000 a year through sharing services while providing more support to their local police. Grays Lake Mayor Rhett Taylor is with us today. Let's give him a round of applause for his service and for setting an example for all of us to follow. Thank you. We've worked hard to change our broken political system and restore competitive general elections in our state. We encouraged, many of us in this room encouraged the people of Illinois to put more than 1 million signatures on petitions to get term limits and fair maps on the ballot. Unfortunately, our judges, who are themselves elected through our state political process, decided that 1 million signatures weren't enough. They decided that only you, each of you, the members of the General Assembly, could pass the necessary legislation to enable the voters to have their say. I ask you today, on behalf of all the people of Illinois, Democrats and Republicans, please do the right thing. Pass the bills to put term limits and fair maps on the ballot. Let the people of Illinois decide these issues for themselves. Let them have the ability to vote on these issues. End the power of incumbency and special interest groups and give power back to the people of our state. Illinois turns 200 in 2018. What better time to give us a brighter next 200 years than by bringing greater integrity to our political system? When it comes to providing a better future for the people of Illinois, nothing we do together is more important than educating our young people. We all want our children to be able to stay here in Illinois with good-paying jobs. We want employers to come to Illinois because we have the best people. So our administration has made education from cradle to career top priority. 2 years ago, we delivered, together with you, unprecedented funding for our K-12 schools. And the next year, we came back and did it again. In all, our kids are receiving more than $700 million more per year, our kids and our teachers. $700 million more per year than 2 years ago, including an extra $100 million more for early childhood education. Thank you. This terrible practice of proration is coming to an end. We formed a bipartisan task force to recommend changes to the unbalanced way our K-12 public schools are funded. For years and years, Illinois has provided the lowest percentage of education financial support from any state in the country. This is wrong. I personally believe this is immoral. It denies the American dream to low-income kids. We have the largest gap between funding for high-income schools and low-income schools of any state in the country. This is wrong. We have to end that, both across the state and within the city of Chicago. The task force expects to finish their work in the coming weeks, and we look forward to working on a bipartisan basis to implement their recommendations. We created the Governor's Cabinet on Children and Youth, bringing together all state agencies that serve our children to ensure that Illinois' young people are healthy, safe, well-educated, and on the road to becoming self-sufficient. The commitment, cooperation, and effective problem-solving among these agencies is extraordinary. I'm so proud of their work. In partnership with external partners in the private sector, they will make Illinois a better place for all of our children. They're working with the Illinois State Board of Ed, the local high schools, our community colleges, and local employers. Our youth cabinet is striving to expand vocational training and technical apprenticeship programs for all of our high school students while they are in high school, so each of them has a clear path to an attractive career. Another critical initiative of the Children's Cabinet is reducing young children's exposure to lead. We put this at the top of the Cabinet's priority list from day one when we formed them last year. We're proud to recognize Jen Walling from the Illinois Environmental Council, who's working with us on this effort, and she's here today. Jen, thank you for your work. On Martin Luther King Day, all of us, Democrats and Republicans, stood together in signing a bill that requires all schools and daycare centers to test their drinking water regularly and inform parents of the results. Dr. King spoke about the threat of lead poisoning in 1966, so it's particularly appropriate that we're able to sign that important piece of legislation on his birthday. Reducing lead. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Reducing lead exposure, which disproportionately affects low-income children and children of color, is a social justice issue. So, too, is ensuring that we provide a means for those in our criminal justice system to rehabilitate themselves and return to productive lives. Everybody deserves a second chance. We are a state of compassion and forgiveness. Everybody deserves a second chance. Over the past 2 years, our administration has worked to reform our criminal justice system, reduce recidivism, and address underlying behavioral and mental health issues for those in our systems of care in order to keep our communities safer and more compassionate. We're making great strides in implementing initial recommendations from our Commission on Criminal Justice Reform, helping nonviolent ex-offenders get back on their feet and giving them meaningful skills to find employment. We're turning around the Department of Children and Family Services. It is so critical that they provide their services well, and it's been a deeply troubled agency, as we all know, for a long time. We're making strides. It's hard, but we're making strides. We've safely reduced the juvenile justice population by 49%. We've shuttered the outdated roundhouse at Stateville Prison while repurposing two other facilities in Murfreesboro and Kewaunee as life skill centers to help nonviolent offenders return to the workforce more effectively. Thank you. Sadly, very unfortunately, our progress in reducing nonviolent crime is being overshadowed by the skyrocketing rate of violence in Chicago. The violence occurring in Chicago every day is intolerable. We cannot let it continue. We've got to bring it to an end. Violence experts say there's no single cause and no single solution. But with the right mix of policies, with a joint commitment between the city, the county, the state, and the federal government, we can and must find solutions to curb the violence. At the Illinois State Police, we're providing the Chicago Police Department with a wide range of resources, and we stand ready to do more wherever and whenever called upon. Our troopers have already surged to counter the violence that spilled over onto our expressways, and we're committed to hiring more state police officers to help patrol Chicago expressways and other high-violence areas. Now, law enforcement plays a critical role in violence reduction, but in the end, it's a treatment. It's not a cure. Addressing the roots of this plague will take much more. To restore hope where hope has been lost. to build a long-term future of quality education and good jobs for communities that need it the most. Most important thing we can do for the long term. Tearing down the barriers to good jobs and economic opportunity. Getting rid of blight and incentivizing redevelopment. Making sure both the state and Chicago Public Schools itself treat low-income kids the same as high-income kids. Giving parents more choices and support to give their kids a world-class education. Putting vocational training back into our high schools so young people, all young people in every neighborhood, whether they want to go to college or not, all young people can see a clear path to a career rather than falling victim to the gang recruiters. As my good friend Reverend Marshall Hatch has said, nothing stops a bullet like a job. That is so true. And so we're building on opportunity in every community, focused on more opportunity, so that every resident of Illinois can share in the American dream. We have got to get jobs into our neighborhoods, not just certain areas, everywhere, everywhere in every neighborhood. That's the single greatest priority we have, growing more good-paying jobs everywhere in Illinois. Now, to do that, improving transportation is critical to our goal of growing more jobs across the state. We've advanced critical transportation projects to improve the quality of life for residents and attract new families and businesses. We rebuilt 62 miles of Interstate 90 between Rockford and Chicago, replaced or rehabilitated 100 bridges along the way. We expanded the I-57-70 corridor in Effingham and completed a new flyover ramp connecting the Dan Ryan and the Eisenhower Expressways in Chicago. And here's an important one. With your approval, we need your help. We need your authorization. With your approval here in the General Assembly, we're hoping to create a public-private partnership to create a new managed lane on I-55, paid for by private investors, not taxpayers. The project will create thousands of construction jobs, expand the quality of life for our commuters, and support faster economic growth throughout the region. I hope we can do this together. It'll make a big difference. We created a partnership that draws upon the wisdom and experience of our state's top business executives to recruit employers, job creators. We call it Intersect Illinois. It includes people like Sheila Morgan of the Minority Supplier Development Council, Inga Karras, a 30-year environmental business leader and chairman of the Peru, Illinois Karras Group, Jim Wong, a CEO and business entrepreneur with more than 20 years' experience, and the chairman, Jim Schultz, a fifth-generation Illinoisan and agribusiness entrepreneur. Working together, they are trying to bring hope and opportunity across our entire state. Sheila, Inga, Jim Wong are here today. Let's thank them for their service to our state. Thank you for your work. Thank you. They've already been successful in recruiting employers like Amazon to expand here in Illinois. Amazon's committed to bringing 7,000 new jobs across Illinois. Thousands and thousands across the state, not just in one region. It's a big deal. And we're in good talks with more employers. They'd like to see us make changes, but they're ready to come. Working with you in the General Assembly, we were also able to save jobs in the Quad Cities and in Clinton by passing legislation that ensured energy plants there stayed open. That was a big deal. Thank you. Thank you for all of you in the room. We protected families and job creators by putting caps on business and residential energy rates. That was critical. At the same time, we were able to advance green energy by improving our renewable energy portfolio standard that will lead to billions of dollars in private investment in wind and solar energy here. Big deal. Thank you. Jeff Rage and his wife Stephanie live in Clinton with their daughters, 8-year-old Hallie and 6-year-old Maisie. They're here with us. Jeff works as a chemistry technician at the plant. Stephanie is an IT analyst for State Farm, and their daughters attend Clinton Public Schools. They were understandably nervous about the potential plant closing and elated when we successfully passed the Future Energy Jobs Bill. Rage family is here today. We can all be thankful to be here in Illinois residents for many years to come. Thank you. Thanks for coming. But this is just a start. Illinois is home to some of the greatest research universities in the world. Working in partnership, we have the potential, and I'm personally 100% committed to this, we have the potential to create a technology and innovation center here in Illinois, here in the Midwest, that can rival Silicon Valley or North Carolina's Research Triangle, creating tens of thousands of high-paying jobs. We can recruit companies who are drawn to our great transportation system, our natural resources, and our Midwestern work ethic and quality of life. Working together, we can accomplish this kind of growth and opportunity. It is totally within our ability to achieve if we do it together. Critical to our success in doing this is helping our world-class research universities like the U of I and SIU, both of which are world-class research, got to extend their footprint in Illinois, form alliances with other great research institutions like the University of Chicago and Northwestern, and significantly expand their efforts in research and innovation. Our goal can be for our great research universities to drive the same stunning level, actually shocking level, of company formation, entrepreneurship, innovation, and wealth creation that Harvard and MIT have done for New England and Stanford and Berkeley have done for California. We can do this. We can help the U of I, we can help SIU, we can help others expand their research capability and drive company formation and job creation at an incredible, exciting rate. Together, we can get it done. A few months ago, I met a native son of Illinois, Sam Yagan, who has moved his family back to Illinois after many years of success in Silicon Valley. He created a very successful high-tech company in Silicon Valley, but he wanted to be in Illinois. He loves Illinois. He came back because this is home. He loves it here. He loves the people, our values, the quality of life in our great state. He's working to make the next great tech success story right here in Illinois. In fact, he's trying to buy a tech company in Silicon Valley and bring it, move it back to Illinois. I know how he feels. I know you do too. We love this state, the people here, and our way of life. This is our home, and we'll never give up trying to make it better. I hope to introduce you to Sam. Sam was hoping to come, but he's stuck out there on the deal in California, but he's coming. I hope you can meet him. We were talking about how we're going to do this together. Now, clearly, we're excited about the achievements we've made and the unlimited opportunities open to us, but we still face significant challenges. We haven't had a full-year budget of some kind in a year and a half, and we haven't had a state budget that is truly balanced in decades. We have more than $11 billion in unpaid bills, a $130 billion unfunded pension liability, the worst credit rating in the nation. And we already have the fifth highest overall tax burden and one of the lowest rates of job creation of any state. And these problems aren't new. They didn't just happen in the last 18 months. They've been building up for many years as past governors and general assemblies, both political parties, kicked the can down the road to avoid making tough decisions. Years of irresponsible borrowing and deficit spending have been devastating to human service organizations that assist children, senior citizens, people with behavioral health issues and disabilities, and other of our most vulnerable residents. It has caused student and faculty departures at our colleges and universities, decades of undisciplined spending and uncompetitive regulations and taxes have made employers hesitant about coming or staying in Illinois, limiting job opportunities across the state. We're seeing the collective impact of these realities from Carbondale to Chicago, from East St. Louis to Danville. Families and employers are leaving. Not-for-profit service agencies and small businesses are cutting staff and services. And here's the critical point. We are failing to be compassionate because we are failing to be competitive. These problems aren't new, but these problems are now ours to solve. We can and we must do better. We know that much in our state has been broken for many years, but we know, too, that there's a way forward. There is a path to a better future for all Illinois families. All of us, on both sides of the aisle, President Cullerton, Leader Redonio, Speaker Madigan, and Leader Durkin, we all agree that we must have a truly balanced budget and we must make changes to our broken system to return our state to a path of prosperity. I would like to listen to some recent quotes that have been in the press that I've noticed. First quote, what's going on is not good for the state. The only way we can solve our problems is in a bipartisan fashion. To break the impasse, both sides must respect each other's priorities. That means negotiate, compromise. We should focus on working together and finding common ground to address the issues facing our state. Those statements were made by Leader Redonio, President Cullerton, Leader Durkin, and Speaker Madigan. I strongly agree with every single one of them. Now, let's get it done. Our state's economy could take off like a rocket ship if we could just come together on major pro-jobs changes that need legislation to take effect. Lawmakers from both parties deserve credit for working for many months to find ways to reduce regulatory costs and property tax burdens that make businesses in Illinois less competitive than our neighbors. Hopefully, we can build on these initial proposals to ensure they drive big results on job creation. And hopefully, we can work together to cut the red tape even more, reduce and filing fees and costly licensing barriers that prevent hardworking Illinoisans from qualifying for good, high-paying jobs. When it comes to the budget, we all can agree Illinois has to do something different. Our administration has offered many proposals to achieve a truly balanced budget with changes that fundamentally fix our broken system. We must remember, this is critical, I ask, we've got to remember, to keep budgets balanced in the future, our rate of economic growth has to be higher than our rate of government spending growth. It's simple math. That's just a truth. We have got to grow our economy. We've got to be more competitive if we're going to have balanced budgets. Changes to the workers' compensation system to prevent misuse and abuse, attract employers and good jobs. Property tax relief to reduce the immense burden felt by our families and businesses, to give them reason to stay here in Illinois. Term limits and fair maps, redistricting reform, where voters can pick their representatives, not the other way around, in order to restore the confidence of job creators and working families in our state. We've offered these proposals to drive the change that we all know is necessary. It's heartening to see the Senate coming together on a bipartisan basis to acknowledge these changes are needed. Let's build on that cooperation to achieve a truly balanced budget and changes that really move the needle on job creation and property tax relief. Now, let me take a second off the script for just a second. I would personally like to thank the senators here today. President, leaders, thank you. Thank you for working so hard to try to come together on a bipartisan basis to find a compromise to get a truly balanced budget with changes to the system to help job creators and protect taxpayers. We all know this is very, very difficult. There's a lot of arrows. Please don't give up. Please keep working. Please keep trying. The people of Illinois need you to succeed. Thank you for your efforts. Our aim to have the most ethical and efficient government in the nation, the best schools in every community, and good jobs for all our residents, these goals are all within our reach. All of us are here to build a better future for families across Illinois, to build a future where our economy booms and job creation soars, where states around America watch with amazement as Illinois takes the lead in innovation, job growth, and economic opportunity, where people around the country say to themselves, you know what? We want to live in Illinois. That's where we want to build a business. That's where we want to start a family. That's where we can achieve the American dream. It's a future where our schools are the envy of the world, where every child from every background gets the same high-quality education, from cradle to career, to get on the path to wealth, prosperity, and a high quality of life. It's a future where our budgets are balanced for decades to come, where our credit ratings rise as our pension liabilities drop, where our economy grows faster than government spending, where taxpayers are treated with respect, and their government squeezes every penny to go the extra mile. We've been at the bottom for far, far too long. It's time we race to the top, to lead the nation in job creation, to lead the nation in education funding and outcomes, to lead the nation in ethics and accountability, to lead the nation in poverty alleviation and violence reduction. We've made important gains in government efficiency and economic development these last 2 years. Now, let's work together to make Illinois more competitive so we can realize a better future of jobs and opportunity for all. And yes, we've made important gains in education support these last 2 years. Now, let's work together to ensure that every child in every neighborhood, in every community, has that opportunity to succeed. To ensure the violence that plagues Chicago and other communities, it's not just Chicago, that violence comes to an end. To give people hope that tomorrow will be better than today. All of us, Democrats, Republicans, everybody in between, we all have a moral obligation to work together to bring change. We together can return Illinois to a place of hope, opportunity, and prosperity. Illinois is home. All of us love it here in our home. Ultimately, we all want the same things for our home: good jobs, strong schools, safe communities. It's just a question of respecting each other's views and how we get there. If we negotiate in good faith, we can move Illinois forward as a state which is both competitive and compassionate. Now let's work together to get the job done. Thank you all. God bless you. God bless our beloved state of Illinois. And may God continue to bless the United States of America. Thank you.
Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner with his third State of the State address. You've been listening to it here on WBEZ Chicago. I'm Tony Sarabia, here with our WBEZ State House reporter, Tony Arnold. Well, Tony, lace up our shoes because it's time we race to the top, as the governor said toward the end of the speech, couching all of this, these challenges as a moral obligation. He did say something toward the end where I thought I heard you say, wow, and then he said, we have to respect each other's views on how we get there. How significant is that line coming from the governor?
That's the root of everything that's going on right now and has been for the last 2 years since Rauner took the office, is that I think there's really a feeling of disrespect from both sides, from both Democrats and Republicans, about why there's been no budget, why there's been no agreement on the economic reforms that Rauner wants. It's really been, I mean, the whole stalemate has been just really these two immovable objects in Governor Rauner on one side and Speaker Madigan on the other. And that, you know, that's been nasty. It's been personal. There's been changes into how testimony is received in the Senate, in the House. It's so a change in the decorum there. There's been political trackers in the parking lots going into the Capitol building to follow individual state lawmakers. Even, you know, this was done right after the election, 2016 election. So it's not even in the political season. All of this is to say that that line really stood out to me because I don't hear Rauner. I hear him a lot, and I don't hear him talk about raising this, you know, a question of respecting each other's views that often, because I think a lot of Democrats might say, well, he hasn't been respecting our views, just as much as Rauner would say that Democrats have not been respecting his.
And of course, he's the governor, so he gets the bully pulpit. And as we heard in this State of the State address, kind of some themes that have been repeated from the last State of the State address, addresses that he's been given, things that he will not give up, things that he has argued that need to be part of a budget. Because I guess, you know, one could argue, well, look, can't we make a bill, a vote on term limits and as he calls them, fare maps, can't we make that separate? Let's get a budget done. But as he alluded to in the State of the State address, they're sort of inseparable for him.
Yeah, and if anything, this is more than doubling down at this point. This is a tripling down, a quadrupling down on his what he's calling the turnaround agenda. He highlighted the same issues he has been for years about his conditions for achieving a budget, which are workers' compensation changes to be more favorable to companies. And Democrats say that comes at the expense of workers. A property tax freeze for local governments. He says property taxes are too high. The issue there, Democrats say, would be that this would tie the hands of school districts that rely on property taxes. So potentially cuts to education could be coming if that goes through. And then term limits and redistricting reform, those two things he spent a considerable amount of time on saying. Actually, Rauner in his speech here at the beginning was saying that those two issues should be on the ballot to change the state constitution,
right,
but it needs to be done by lawmakers because there's been citizen initiatives and petitions passed that ended up in court. And each time judges have ruled that these should not be on the ballot. They are, in fact, unconstitutional proposals under the way that the current constitution is written. So Rauner's point is if citizens can't do this through petitions, then the only other way to change the constitution is by lawmakers doing it themselves. It might not be a secret that the legislative leaders are not fans of term limits, given that Speaker Madigan has been speaker now for, this is his 17th two-year term. So do the math.
That's
34 years. And then President Cullerton on the Senate side, has also been elected since the 70s, I believe, but he's been, although the Senate did change their rules internally just to allow for Senate leaders can't be a leader for more than 10 years. So that's where those term limits stand now. But interesting that Rauner would go after judges in that way to say that it shouldn't be left up to judges. It should be up to lawmakers.
WBEZ state politics reporter Tony Arnold. Tony, I want to bring in a state representative, Democratic state representative Melinda Bush. Hi, state senator. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You know, right at the top of the governor's speech, you know, he laid out goals for the administration. And I just made a note. I said, you know, you can't argue with the goals, but of course the devil is in the details. Things like making Illinois the most ethical and efficient state, investing in education, making our state more competitive. But again, as I say, it's how do you get there? And given what has been going on in the Senate, with some move toward compromise, how do you see the governor's role in all of this?
Well, I have to tell you, you know, I'm looking at this as kind of the governor's halftime. Imagine this is a four-quarter football game. And I would say that his first half has not been a very successful half.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, he came out with some wonderful ideas and goals about where we should be in the state of Illinois. But frankly, I didn't hear any substance. What I've seen so far, I mean, we are working hard in the Senate to try and compromise, to work across the aisle and get something done. But frankly, my experience has been here that the speaker doesn't want to negotiate and our governor doesn't know how to negotiate.
Senator, this is Tony Arnold, and I'm wondering what you thought of the way that the governor concluded his speech in talking about this whole impasse is a question of respecting each other's views. Do you feel like that there has been a respect of views on both sides here?
You know, I would say that the Senate has been sending a message for quite some time that we want to work across the aisle. But frankly, that has to come from the governor also. And I haven't seen that from the governor. The governor has his turnaround agenda, still items that he believes we have to pass in order to move forward. We have huge cuts that we've made. I find it difficult to listen that we're talking about how important our public education system is, and particularly our universities, when we are underfunding them, when we have universities that actually, you know, at the end of the budget year, at the end of our session last year, were literally concerned that they might close their doors and lose their accreditation. Right. So, you know, for me, there was not a lot of substance. And not a lot of proof that he's willing to compromise.
Well, of course, hanging over all of this in the State of the State address is, as he mentioned toward the end, is the fact that there's still no full budget. We've talked about the talks that have been going on, but the governor is not at the table. What does your colleague on the other side of the aisle, Senator Redonio, have to say about the governor's absence from all of this?
You know, that would certainly be something you should ask of her, you know, but I honestly believe that the reason that President Cullerton and Speaker Redonio are working together is the governor has not worked across the aisle. Mm-hmm. You know, he comes from not just business. I mean, this is a guy who bought companies, took them apart and sold them. He's not someone who built businesses, in my mind, and I don't think it's his forte. I believe they're working together because, again, I don't believe the governor has negotiated or compromised.
Do you think that
I haven't seen it?
Do you think there's a possibility that if the Senate does come to some sort of agreement, that it really shows the governor, in a sense, look, they're working without me, and if that happens, maybe some of the things that I want won't be included. Maybe I should take part in this.
You know, I hope so. The people of the state of Illinois are fed up, and they have every right to be fed up with their elected officials, with their governor, with the leaders. We, the people that live here, deserve to get something done. You know, frankly, we were $1 billion in debt when the governor took office. We're now nearly $12 billion in debt. And please understand, you know, the people of Illinois need to understand that those are bills that our taxpayers owe. You know, they're not going away. This isn't overspending. This isn't future spending. These are our mental health providers, our domestic abuse providers, you know, our child care providers, our public education. You know, we owe this money. And frankly, if we don't get something done, I believe it looks like to me about every 6 months that go by, the additional money we are going to owe is going to force taxes, income tax, to go up probably a half a percentage each 6 months. It's irresponsible. We have to get a budget done in the state of Illinois. And if the Senate has to force that by doing the work and with our leaders to get the governor to realize he's got to negotiate and Speaker Madigan, well, then that's what we need to be doing.
Senator, I'd ask you to change the topics just a little bit about the
sure.
section of the speech that pertained to violence in Chicago, mm-hmm. in which the governor said that, speaking about policing in particular, that that's a treatment of the violence issue, not a cure, and instead referring back to his economic reforms or economic agenda and creating more jobs as a way that he sees the best way to reduce violence in Chicago. So I'm wondering just what you thought of that tone and this idea that basically his economic agenda is the best way to address the violence that's happening in the city.
Look, I represent the most northeastern district in the state of Illinois. So I border Wisconsin, and we compete a lot for jobs on the borders. And absolutely, a good job is certainly, you know, a way out of a violent life and being in that situation. But you've got to make investments. You know, you have got to make sure that we're not just, you know, that we're attracting good jobs. And part of that is making sure that, you know, we have programs that attract and maintain good jobs. You know, we just saw our EDGE credit program die at the end of the year. And, you know, we had to extend it. The administration hadn't done the work, frankly, on extending a program that businesses use to grow and use to come to the state of Illinois. So I agree with the governor, you know, that we need to build our jobs and attract and retain good jobs. I mean, it definitely is an answer, but so is early childhood education. You know, we have cut funding so that, you know, less children are able to be in a preschool situation.
Let me ask you very quickly, State Senator, because we're going to get one of your colleagues on in a moment. What are you hearing from your constituents? I mean, what are they saying most specifically that they're concerned about, given there's no budget deal yet?
You know, they're just concerned about our reputation, that we're a laughingstock. I mean, really, when I go to the grocery store, everyone, almost without exception that I know, asks me, so what's going on? When are you guys going to get a budget? You know, they expect us to get something done. You know, the specifics are, you know, I'm embarrassed about the state of Illinois, and I'm embarrassed about it, too. We need to get something done.
State Senator, Democratic Senator Melinda Bush, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, and thanks for what you guys do. Real news.
On the line with us now is State Representative State Senator, Representative. Thank you for joining us, State Representative Andre Tappetti.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having your program today.
Now, you're part of the Black Caucus, and I'm just wondering, there was a news conference following the governor's State of the State address. How do the caucus's priorities line up with the governor's?
Well, I think I can't speak necessarily for the entire caucus because, as you know, the Black Caucus is a very diverse caucus that we have members from as far north as Waukegan to members all the way down in East St. Louis. But I think that what was the most remarkable aspect of the governor's State of the State address was that he made a statement that he said, we are failing to be compassionate because we are failing to be competitive. I found that to be extremely offensive and indicative of why we're having the problem in the state of Illinois that we have right now. Mm-hmm. I thought it was unfair and I thought it was unrealistic, and that the current state of Illinois is absolutely dismal. We don't have a budget. The most vulnerable people in our state are dying. Seniors, elderly, and the sick are forced to choose between eating and buying their prescription drugs to stay alive. And the prospects of having a budget implemented in the near future appear to be minuscule at best. I think that the governor's theme and statement that he's deeply optimistic, to use his words, about our state was rather disingenuous.
That is State Representative Andre Tappetti talking from the Capitol. Sounds like you're in the hall of the chambers.
And Representative, this is Tony Arnold here. I just wanted to ask you a similar question that I asked Senator Melinda Bush, which is your thoughts on the governor's comments regarding Chicago violence. In particular, he said that he sees law enforcement reforms or anything pertaining to policing as a treatment to the violence that's happening in Chicago, not a cure. And instead, he talked about how his economic agenda could basically help out with Chicago's violence. And I'm wondering how you thought or what was going through your mind when you heard him address that.
Well, I think that's nothing new. I think it's absolutely nothing new that in the inner city, especially the community that I represent, which is a substantial portion of Inglewood, we need jobs. But Governor Rauner has now been in office for 18 months, if not more, and how many jobs has he created in our communities? How many? I recall that when he first came to office, he promised to turn Illinois into a booming economy. And those are his words, that he would turn Illinois into a booming economy. That hasn't happened. And I think that we're actually moving backwards rather than forwards. So to answer your question, I absolutely think that the statements that were made today about the ability of people having jobs will reduce some of the violence and bring hope to a community that is, quite frankly, hopeless is absolutely accurate. But at some point, we need to get the ball rolling. And the way that we get the ball rolling is that we have a budget, and I think the Illinois Constitution and Illinois law is very clear on this point. It's the governor's responsibility to present to us in the legislature a budget. We will either vote it up or we will vote it down. But since Governor Rauner has been in office, he has never presented a budget.
Do you view this as a
coming up shortly? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Do you view this whole fight, this budget battle, as sort of a proxy battle between the governor and House Speaker Michael Madigan?
I think it's beyond the governor and Speaker Madigan. I think that Speaker Madigan's position, from what I understand, from what Speaker Madigan has said, is he's committed to protecting the middle class. He's committed to protecting democratic values. He's committed to making sure that the most vulnerable people that I referred to a little bit earlier have some protections. And I do understand Governor Rauner's point. I mean, Governor Rauner is a businessman. That's what he knows. He knows business. He knows venture capitalism. He understands all that. And that's great. And there may be a place for that. But when we're talking about the betterment of society right now, especially when we're talking about the most vulnerable people in our community, I think that the governor is mistaken by looking at the entire state and the situation that we're in as a business deal. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to work. It hasn't worked so far. And I'm really getting a little frustrated that we're continuing to go down the same path.
It sounds like the governor, you know, when I was talking to Tony Arnold earlier, what the governor laid out in terms of the administration's goals, I thought, well, you really can't argue these goals. The devil is in the details. But I'm wondering, you know, so you don't buy his argument that, look, I do agree with you, State Representative, but here's the way we get there. And then he lays out, we need workers' comp reform. We need to have fair maps. Do you see that as part of, I mean, can you buy into any of that as a way to get to where you're saying we need to go and be?
Of course I can. And as a person who represents plaintiffs in courts throughout this state, I certainly understand the need for some reforms in the legal system. I get that. But again, the governor's theme is he wants to grow the economy to make us competitive. And according to him, if we're competitive, then he'll be more compassionate with the most vulnerable people in our community. Okay, I understand what he's saying. I don't agree with that, but I understand what he's saying. So then I ask you and I ask the listeners, what do term limits have to do with growing the economy and making us more competitive? What does redistricting have to do with growing the economy and making us more competitive? So in other words, what I'm saying is that those items that the governor believes to be budgetary type items, let's look at those. I don't have an issue with that. But holding the budget hostage over non-budgetary items makes absolutely no sense. It makes no sense to me. I now understand after the governor made his statement that we're failing to be compassionate because we're failing to be competitive. So in other words, he's saying that being competitive is a prerequisite to being compassionate. Mm-hmm. I just fundamentally disagree with that.
Democratic State Representative Andre Tappetti talking with us from the state capitol. We just heard the governor give his State of the State address. State Representative, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Tony Arnold, of course, this is sort of the lead up to where the governor is expected to get into more details about his budget, the budget address coming up in the not too distant future. Just your very quick reaction to what he said in terms of that you can't put the two together. It doesn't seem like the governor has been able to advance that argument more strongly that, well, here's why term limits will help grow the economy.
He hasn't, other than just, I mean, the implication there is that term limits would put an end date to Speaker Madigan's time in Springfield, mm-hmm. or at least as Speaker. So that is what's implied in talking about that. And Madigan, of course, is the person who has been the most vocal and stopped most of these ideas of Rauner's, saying that he's doing this on behalf of the middle class people. So that is where this is all coming from. And you're right that Rauner, in I think 3 weeks, will be delivering a budget address at a time when the state of Illinois once again has no budget.
And as State Senator Melinda Bush termed it, the governor giving his halftime speech, his State of the State speech, Tony Arnold, our WBEZ state politics reporter. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
And thanks to WILL and CLTV for providing audio. Thanks to Carrie Shepherd for producing and Daniel Masusi for engineering. This is WBEZ Chicago. I'm Tony Sarabia.